And it's about 10 seconds after the hour. Today is Tuesday, the 5th of July. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juneau Afternoon. We've got some great guests today. Robert Barr and Andy Hirsch will be giving us an update on activities at the Juneau Public Libraries. Jordan Niger will be here with news about the Zach Gordon Youth Center. Chief of Police Bryce Johnson from the Juneau Police Department will be here to talk about some things going on with JPD, and we'll also continue our celebration of summer fun with Renee Hughes from the Last Chance Basin Mining Museum and Historical Park. Of course, in addition to Writer's Almanac Bird Note music, that's here on a Juneau Afternoon. Stay tuned. Right after National Native News, we'll get talking to our guests.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A major pipeline proposal in Western Canada has suffered a setback. A federal court in Canada has revoked the federal government's approval, saying it failed to consult with Aboriginal people. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The proposed $8 billion Northern Gateway pipeline would carry oil from Alberta's oil sands to the north coast of British Columbia, where it would then be shipped to overseas markets. The federal government gave the green light in 2014, but it hasn't gone any further because of legal issues. Now the Federal Court of Appeal has quashed that approval, saying the government neglected to discuss subjects of critical importance to First Nations by ignoring many of the project's impacts and offering only a brief, hurried, and inadequate opportunity for consultation. Peter Lanton is the president of the Council of the Haida Nation.
This validates all the efforts that we've been putting forward to make this crystal clear about what it means for the Haida Nation. And, of course, I can only speak for the Haida Nation on this matter. But the consultation for us, you know, the environmental assessment scope did not include Haida Gwaii during that consultation phase.
The Federal Resources Minister says his department will review the decision before determining its next steps, if any. The president of the Northern Gateway Pipeline also says his company would consult with its 31 First Nations partners and investors before any decisions are made. Reaction from other First Nations were mixed, some calling it bittersweet, while environmental groups celebrated the court ruling. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes are seeking to gain management of the National Bison Range located in northwest Montana. Amy Martin has more.
The National Bison Range was carved out of the Flathead Reservation by the federal government in 1908. Now the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes have proposed legislation to put that land back under tribal management. Rich Jansen is head of the Natural Resources Department for the CSKT.
You know, the time is now. It's a long time coming for this to happen, and I'm pretty proud to say that I'm going to be a part of history. It's going to be a historic day indeed.
But there are some hurdles to cross before that day comes. A group of former employees and concerned citizens have joined a lawsuit by the group Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility to stop the tribes from gaining management control. The public is invited to weigh in on the debate at a meeting on July 12th at Salish Kootenai College. The meeting starts at 7 p.m. Written comments can also be submitted online at the tribe's Bison Range Working Group website. The deadline for those comments has been extended to July 15th. For National Native News, I'm Amy Martin.
Last week, the federal government and Volkswagen agreed to a $15 billion settlement against the car company. As Emily Schwing reports, nearly 30% of that money will go specifically to tribes.
Leaders in Indian country are celebrating nearly $50 million in the settlement that's earmarked specifically for tribes.
This is truly unprecedented.
Joanne Chase directs the EPA's Native American office.
But I'm not aware of another settlement of this magnitude where tribes literally have been included, and importantly so.
Volkswagen is accused of cheating on emissions tests and deceiving customers. Chase says the Native American allocation wouldn't have happened without cooperation between federal and tribal leaders.
Where states are often parties to these settlements, if states are parties, then it's probably highly likely and appropriate that tribes should be included as parties too.
Under the settlement agreement, Volkswagen is obligated to buy back or fix diesel vehicles sold or leased in the U.S. since 2009. The automobile giant will also fund air pollution mitigation projects and green vehicle technology programs. Tribes will have the opportunity to participate in those programs that best meet the needs of their respective communities. For National Native News, I'm Emily Schwing in Spokane.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
And by Humboldt State University's online Master of Social Work program, which focuses on decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted August 1st to 31st at humboldt.edu/social work. Support provided by Never Alone, a video game based on Inupiat tales and made in partnership with the Alaska Native community. Never Alone is available now on the App Store and Google Play. More information at neveralonegame.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And it's just about 6 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 5th of July. This is a Juneau afternoon. And our first guests today are Robert Barr and Andy Hirsch from the Juneau Public Libraries. Welcome, Andy and Robert.
Hi, Ben.
Tell me
and our listeners your specific titles at the Juneau Public Library.
I'm the library director.
And I'm the electronic services and community outreach librarian.
Okay, so that's a lot, both electronic services and community outreach.
Yes, I am. I work with things online. I try and work with people who don't come to the library or can't come to the library. And I do programs and events.
That's
very fun.
And I imagine that some of what you want to share with our listeners this afternoon is some of the program and events activity coming up in the near future.
Indeed, we do, yeah.
What are you most excited about?
We have a lot of stuff going on at the library because it's summer reading, and we're very excited about that. So, for instance, tomorrow at the Douglas Library, 1 o'clock, the Juneau Jumpers are going to come, and it's part of our Wellness Wednesday series. So every Wednesday, 1 o'clock at Douglas, we have a fun physical activity and snacks, and it changes every time. And so we're very excited that the Juneau Jumpers are coming, so people can learn to jump rope and try it out, and you don't need to know anything or be really good at stuff to come and do it. And so it's for ages 8 to 18, and they're adults if they would like to come. So I'm really excited about that. I went online and I watched the Juneau Jumper videos, and it's phenomenal. Like, it is mind-blowingly cool.
Mm-hmm.
So you should come. I mean,
I got
everyone
to see them
come
at the Showtime at the dance team's recital performance earlier this year at JDHS. And they really, of course, if you look at that and think, I can't do that, they'll do introductory jump rope as well. They're not going to try to make you do the double dutch blindfolded first time out of the gate.
Right.
That's one of my favorite things about it, actually. I've got kids in that age range,
mm-hmm.
and that no experience necessary clause in there is super applicable to me because I have a child that loves watching their videos but doesn't have a lot of jump roping experience. And being able to go there knowing that it's going to be something that is applicable to her is something that I like a lot.
And that's tomorrow at the Douglas Library.
Correct, 1 o'clock.
Okay, 1 o'clock. And that's part of a Wellness Wednesday series. So I'm going to infer from that every Wednesday something is going
every
on.
Every Wednesday it's something different. So later this month we're going to have yoga. We're going to have a labyrinth for people to walk, a bunch of different activities.
Will there be a minotaur in the labyrinth?
I hope so.
Okay. To be determined.
That'll always get people, moving a little more quickly, burning some more calories that way. Well, so what else is going on at Juneau Public Library?
Well, so one thing that we don't promote very often that Andy and I were talking about before the segment that we really should spend more time promoting is just our weekly story times and maker times that happen at the library. So every week at 11 o'clock on Wednesdays downtown, 11 o'clock on Thursdays in Douglas, and 11 o'clock on Fridays in the Valley, we have story times for ages preschool and up. And story times is a perennial library activity program that we've always done. And it's worth mentioning, I think, if you have a preschooler or a young elementary schooler or going into elementary school, come out to the library story times because they are a great way to get your child engaged with reading and with reading for fun, recreational reading.
Excellent. And those so it's all three different locations, Wednesday, Douglas.
Wednesday downtown. Thursday in Douglas,
and Friday
in the Valley.
Very good.
And they're
Perfect.
Actually followed, during the summer, they're followed by a series we call Maker Time. So after we read stories generally on a theme, we then do a craft project. And it's really fun. The kids make stuff that they can take home with them, and it's very exciting and enjoyable for everyone.
And there's no pre-registration. People can just show up at 11 and stay for the noon.
Just show
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, those are some fun activities people may not have been aware about. Now, if people are not actively taking notes right now, I know that the city website has a dedicated page for the library, so you want to direct people in that direction so they can make up for the gaps in the notes that they're up.
Please. So there are a couple different places you can find the information. Our website is www.juno.org/library. We also have a Facebook page where we post events, and you can always call us, 586-5249.
Excellent. And so are there any other activities going on at the library?
There's tons.
Keep going.
So in addition to our Wellness Wednesday series, this month we're also doing Science Fridays, 1 o'clock at, and it changes kind at the different locations. So this Friday, it's at the Valley Library, and it's it's called Project Park. So the city planner, Christy Stedman, is going to come, and she is going to help us imagine a future park right next to the library. We're going to work on site analysis and measuring to scale and working to design plans and explore the space. And so that's geared towards kids ages 7 to 14. Outliers are welcome. And it's really a great experience. And so every Friday, we are doing something different that is very science-themed. So in future weeks, the 15th, we're doing forces of motion, and we're going to build our own hula hoops, and we're going to hula hoop. July 22nd, we are going to build and launch rockets. We're going to launch rockets. I'm so good at the speaking thing. We're going to launch rockets, and we're actually going to talk with somebody at the Museum of Flight in Seattle. At the end of the month, we're going to go to the SLAM building and work on their Science on Sphere, which is this giant map that uses projectors, and you can fill out information you want and see it on a global scale. And so we're going to talk about maps and science. And so different science activities every Friday, 1 o'clock. And they're so cool.
Well, that really does make sense because it is a library as well as a museum.
Yeah.
So to have this activity there really doesn't deviate from the library-oriented schedule.
It sure doesn't. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So anything else going on, Robert and Andy, that listeners want to know about at the Juno Public Libraries?
So there is a program on July 12th that we are actually doing in partnership with the City Museum called Things Shouldn't Go Bump in the Night, Paranormal Investigations in Museums and Historical Sites. And it's at the Valley Library on Tuesday, July 12th at 6:30. We needed to bring up a conservator to do an analysis of some of the museum's iron artifacts at the City Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And while he's here, he's doing this talk on paranormal investigations in museums. So if that's of interest to you, that's an all-ages type of thing, but more geared towards older teens and adults. Come on up. The presenter's name is David Harvey, and he's an independent researcher with lots of experience in this area.
Now, do we have any known ghosts at any of the museums here in Juneau that I'm not aware of?
I'm going to go with a no.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Hopefully.
Well, you know, Renee Hughes from the Last Chance Base and Mining Museum is going to be in at the end of the hour, and she would know. So I'll just double check with her.
Mm-hmm. Please do.
Yep, yep.
Well, that sounds like a great program, and it would be appealing for adults as well as younger people. So
yeah.
We're really excited to have him come up and do this talk.
And that's all just in the space of just the month of July. So
that's only the first half of the month of July.
Wow.
We decided we just need a second radio segment this month to talk about everything that we're doing.
And I'm sure Jeff Brown can probably help you get scheduled. You know, if you've got content, he will try to make a space for you. There's no question.
Yep.
Well, so Juno Public Libraries, you know, a service provided by the city and borough of Juno for residents of all ages. And Andy and Robert have outlined some of the great activities that are going on. One more time, Andy, the website, if people want to go and just really dive deep into what all the things that the library can do for them.
Okay. Our website is www.juno.org/library. You can also Google search Juno Public Libraries because we're the best. And so we're at the top.
And you can find us on Facebook.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Robert Barr and Andy Hirsch from the Juno Public Library. Lots of fun activities going on, so if that appeals to you in any way, shape, or form, go learn more about it. And don't delay. Go to the library. Thanks again, Robert. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
And it's about 20 minutes after the hour. And I'm Ben Brown, and this is a Juno Afternoon. And we are, we just listened to Jeffrey Siemens from his album Everything in Between, Michael's Journey, a nice instrumental piece there. Our next guest is Chief Bryce Johnson from the Juno Police Department. Chief Johnson, welcome to Juno Afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about anything and everything related to JPD going on this summer, so it's pretty open-ended. Right before we went on the air, I was mentioning that our lovely town seems to have survived yet another Independence Day weekend, so we can all take a little bit of pride in that, I think.
Yeah, we did okay. I mean, there's always minor hiccups, but we did pretty good. I've got some numbers and stuff that happened over the weekend. I'd be happy to share them.
Absolutely. Go ahead. Jump right into the numbers.
So first off, the whole weekend started with the Juneau Police Department Honor Guard traveling to Whitehorse for the Canada Day Parade, something that we haven't done before. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police have been coming to Juneau for the last several years, and we got an invitation to go up there and return the favor. So the Honor Guard marched in the parade, and they had Old Glory flying and the Alaska state flag, and they were marching right behind the first entry in their parade, which has the Canadian flag. So it was really nice to be there. A lot of people were yelling "Yay, Juno!" as we walked past. It was fun. One of the little kids was confused because I don't think they've had Americans participating in that parade, at least not recently. And one of the little kids asked, "Who's that?" And the parent answered, "Oh, those are the Americans. They're our allies." You know, it was really an honor to be up there and represent the city and the state, and went really well. They have a lot of ceremony, so they started off with an inspection. So all of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police lined up, and they have their own way of doing military drill, and they lined up, and they invited us to come up with them. So the territorial commissioner came out and inspected the RCMP, and it inspected the Juno Honor Guard, and it was a lot of fun.
And that parade that they had was on the 1st in honor of Canada Day.
Correct. It was the 149th birthday of Canada. I learned a lot while I was up there. It was the 149th birthday, and so we participated in that. And it was good to – they've been down here the last several years, and it was nice to be able to take the return trip.
Now, their mayor was able to come and march in our parade yesterday. Boy, it seems like so long ago. Was Mayor Kelch able to go up with our delegation to Whitehorse?
No, it was only police officers that went up to this one. It was the Honor Guard members, and I went with them. And we met their mayor briefly. Mayor Kelch was here when the RCMP delegation got here. The mayor was here, and there were several other people, and he greeted them at the airport. And it was really fun to watch the two mayors talk to each other. He does a great job of representing the community.
Very good, very good. Well, it was nice to see the Mounties in our parade yesterday, of course, and even better to know that it's a back-and-forth sort of a thing. So hopefully that reciprocity will continue in the future.
That's great. One thing I learned is they are police officers, much like we are police officers. They were telling me about a stolen car that ran from them. They got in a chase, and the person took off running, and they were just describing a day at work like we would have a day at work. They told me about their challenges of staffing, and they're not wearing their red uniforms and riding horses on a daily basis. They are very much modern police officers just like us, and it was good to talk to them.
And they probably have some of the same problems we have. So speaking to that day-to-day work of a police department, what would you like to share with our listeners in that regard?
So over the weekend, so we had a long weekend with the holiday. There were 739 calls for service, which is quite a few for that brief period of time. One of the things we were putting an emphasis on this year was additional DUI enforcement. We started participating again with the state grant for DWI DUI enforcement. And so we had extra officers out doing that. We did make 9 DUI arrests over the weekend, which is quite a few for one weekend. So we're happy to get them off the road. We had about 63 911 calls, 21 domestic violence calls, 9 fight calls. I'm sure there were more altercations than that, but there were a lot of officers out over the weekend, so they were able to find most of those fights before people had to call us.
And as regards the DUIs and that sort of enforcement, you know, I know at New Year's there is often a cab home program that's running. It didn't seem like there were a lot of cabs running yesterday, and I don't know if that program is offered by the local taxi companies on Independence Day or not.
So the New Year's program is done by CHAR, the downtown
Cabaret, Hotel, Restaurant,
correct.
Retailers Association.
And they do that for Halloween and for New Year's.
But not for 4th of July.
Not to my knowledge,
okay.
No.
Right.
And so we try to ramp up our enforcement on all of those holidays because they're the popular holidays for people to drink and drive.
Mm-hmm.
So our message to everyone is please don't drink and drive. If you're able to get away with it in the past, consider yourself lucky. consider yourself lucky that you didn't hurt someone, number one, and consider yourself lucky that we didn't catch you. But we've seen DUI enforcement something we need to do more of, and so we've started participating again in the state's grant program to have more officers out doing that. We didn't do that last year, and last year we didn't have any DUI arrests, and this year we had 9. So I think that's a good thing to get them off the road and get the message out there that we need people to drink responsibly and to drive safely.
Absolutely, and it's hard to believe that there was no one out there doing it last year and nine instances this year. I think it's a matter of just ramping up the enforcement. So
the officers were out last year. We just weren't able to. It is so busy over that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We have so many calls, so many things going on, so many things we have to respond to. We have to designate someone just to go do the DUI enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
The state's been good enough to provide grant money. It's pass-through money. To have officers do that.
Okay. So what other activities might listeners be interested in at JPD over the summer?
So we also, you know, I'm not sure that people know how much JPD helps out. So you had that very, very tragic car accident in Petersburg over the weekend as
very
well.
Very sad. They canceled the parade there because
they
of
did.
That.
And it's so sad. You know, we had two teenagers that aren't with us anymore. So we had two of our accident investigators travel to Petersburg to assist in that investigation. So when that happened, they asked if we could give them some help. So we pulled a couple off of our parade route and some things we were doing and sent them to Petersburg, and they were able to help out there with what they were doing in their investigation.
And so we'll just have to wait and learn more about the facts of that as the investigation continues.
Yeah, and we'll let them talk about it. But
sure.
I just want the people to know that, hey, we're good neighbors to our other communities, and if they need help, we're more than happy to go out and do what we can.
Well, I think one question I have to ask, I'm sure some listeners are thinking about it. It does seem like, and there was a pretty thorough article in the newspaper today, Kirk Duncan, the Parks and Recreation Director, talking about how he's extended the comment period for people to chime in on whether or not they think fireworks should be allowed in city parks. It does seem like people are deploying larger, more commercial-grade fireworks than in any time I can remember. But, you know, I was watching from a friend's place up on the hill over there downtown, and you'd see one go off from the barge in the middle of the channel, and the ones from the top of Mount Jumbo were great. I don't think anyone up there is probably really going to be making it too loud other than for a bear on Mount Jumbo. But people are setting ones that are almost that big off just over at Sandy Beach, and at some point, does that become a public safety concern? Did you get a lot of calls about that?
We had 46 firework calls over that same weekend. Normally, the public safety concern with fireworks is the fire danger.
Right.
That's the traditional public safety concern. And as we've looked at, and I'm not a fire expert, but as I've looked at that, we don't have that necessarily here. There's not a big worry about lighting off fires. So our public safety concern is not the same. It's more of a disturbing the peace, quality of life thing,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
Which is real. So our disturbing the peace laws, they talk about a reasonable person standard, right? And so what JPD has said, if you're lighting off fireworks on the 3rd and 4th of July during a reasonable time, the reasonable person standard would say, well, you know, people would expect it to be going off on that holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So most of those complaints, the officers went out and found they were before the city was setting off their fireworks. And so they found a lot of them to be fairly reasonable. If you can buy the fireworks, they're legal. If
mm-hmm.
they're legal to buy here in the state, they're going to, with our current law, they're legal to set off during reasonable times. What I would love to see, and it's easier said than done, is people being good neighbors, right? So I think you have it on all sides. If you're setting fireworks off at 2-3 in the morning, that's going to be a violation of the law, and you're just being a downright rotten neighbor as well. But you can expect a visit from the police officers if you're doing things like that, unreasonably disturbing people's right to to be in their own home and to be safe and secure.
It did also, I would say, it seems like there were a lot more of them for sale at various stores around town. I mean, big packets of them that looked like they were, and I didn't plan to buy any, so I didn't inspect to see what they were, but they just look a lot bigger than the ones we used to get in Houston when I was a kid in Palmer.
Yeah, so I think the ones you can buy in the store here in town aren't the ones you're talking about.
So how do people get those other ginormous ones that are so loud and...
I hesitate to say because then everyone, well, they can buy them at Hanes.
Okay.
So people go to Hanes and buy them, and then they bring them back. They're legal to, they're not legal to sell here in Juneau, but Hanes sells them. They can sell them there. And
presumably they're legal to transport on a ferry.
They're legal to transport. They're legal to possess. They're legal, as long as you're not using them in an unreasonable manner. So if you're shooting them off at someone's house and you're hitting their house, you're raining fire down on someone's house, that's going to be...
That's criminal mischief.
That's going to be something.
I mean,
I'm
not an expert, but I kind of believe that would be a violation of the code.
And again, if you're shooting them off late at night, on the 3rd of July, you know, at 10, 11 at night, the big fireworks display is going off at midnight. It doesn't get dark till about 10 or so. So we weren't doing disturbing the peace violations up until after 1 or so. If you're still shooting them off at 2, 3 in the morning, then you should have expected a visit from the police officers.
So one other thing that occurred to me, watching the parade from my residence at Parkshore, you know, and these troubled times and terrorist things happening, you know, all over the world, and recently in our country some have happened. Were you very concerned going into the holiday weekend about public safety in that regard, or is it just sort of a common sense thing where you ask people to kind of be the eyes and ears of the force?
Both. We are concerned. We don't have, and we talk very frequently and have a close relationship with our federal partners, with the FBI, and they track all those threats. And they share it with us if and when they have a threat here. And we had no specific threats for anything we were doing, which isn't unusual. Juneau's a nice town.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean you don't have to worry about it, because there's been a lot of incidents that occurred and there was no specific threat for it. So when we talk to the public, when we put our stuff out, we say, if you see something, say something, which is the same thing that most places ask. So we have it in our mind. It's not in the back of our mind. It's in the front of our mind, because we're the ones that are going to have to deal with it. But we have a nice community. We didn't see any specific threats that go along with that. And we didn't have any of that playing out.
Well, that's good to know. It's good to know. You know, it's... The world's a crazy place these days, so.
It is, and we prepare for it to be crazy here and are very grateful when it's not. But on the off chance it is, we train for it and we prepare for it and hope we never have to use that training.
Excellent. Well, maybe turning to some happier thoughts, what else is JPD doing to help people enjoy the Alaskan summer here in the capital city?
So the summer's been great. You mentioned some of the traffic, I think, with all the construction.
Yes.
So officers have been out in those construction zones. We've been trying to work out an agreement with DOT so our officers can actually work the construction zones on a regular basis, and hopefully that agreement will be out soon. We're trying to get the agreement done before they're all done with the construction. But I think you told me you sometime practice law, so you understand how sometimes those things take longer.
Negotiations certainly take a while.
Yeah,
but I know people have commented to me, it's like, well, these signs are up that there's changed speed limits, but they're not seeing a car park there, a JPD car park there, that would probably put a little more incentive into people to slow down.
Yeah, and so we can't just park cars and officers in specific areas for extended periods of time, right? Because those officers are the same officers responding to family fights, domestic violence, everything else, and so they're not able to do it for dedicated time. That's why we're trying to enter that agreement with DOT so that we can have additional officers working that would be able to do that, and that'll get done. But as the officers are available, they have been in those zones and doing that enforcement. You've seen a increase in the amount of traffic enforcement that the officers have done over the last bit of time. For the most part, though, I don't think we're used to all those traffic jams. That's something that we're not used to, and that's having a pretty calming effect on traffic. I know it took me almost 45 minutes to get from the valley to Lemon Creek, and there was no way I was going to be speeding. One of the people I was in a little bit of a caravan with decided to pull off on a Glacier, think he could get a little quicker. And when he went all the way around Glacier on a dairy and got in two cars behind me. So it took me about 20 minutes to make the trek, and took him about 22. So That's having a natural calming effect as no one's able to move very quick.
But well, I mean, it's frustrating too, but if you give yourself the extra time, and just on my way into town this afternoon, I had no idea that I wasn't going to be able to take Viandukin Drive and get on to Egan Drive that way because there was no signage back at the airport. I thought I was being clever. So you just kind of have to expect delays and make the best of it.
That's what's happening this year, yeah. And, you know, it's funny because the officers, we're trying to respond to calls, and the officers are in the same frustration with everyone else. But I've got to get there, and I've got to get there relatively quickly, and there's just no way to do it quickly. So we have to stage people in different locations to be able to respond quickly.
Very good. Well, you know, the downside is there's delays now, but the upside is we'll have a lovely new highway by the end of the summer.
There's always an upside to it, so that'll be great.
So anything else, Chief Johnson, you'd like to share with our listeners on a Juneau afternoon today?
So we've talked a lot over the last couple of years about staffing levels and job opportunities at JPD. And at one point we had 12 vacancies, and we were just testing and hiring as quick as we could. We're whittling that down now. We're down to our last couple of vacancies, and we've got several people applying for them. We are going to do another test for people that would like to join the police department. We'll be testing in August, and you can go on our website, and there'll be lots of information for that. So anyone out there that's always wanted to be a police officer, your timing's right, because if you do it now, you might still get in, and we're getting close to filling all our vacancies, and then it's going to be a little harder to become a Juneau police officer.
And what is the size of the force in Juneau right now?
We have 56 officers that we're authorized, and we're down about three.
Okay,
right
so
now.
Only three more spots to go. And if someone is, and so give the JPD website is probably part of the city website, but just for clarity's sake, if you want to just give that to our listeners.
It's JunauPolice.com.
Oh, it's okay. No, yeah. It's not. So I was wrong. JunauPolice.com. It's its own standalone website. And if someone wants to take the test and see if he or she can move to that next level, there's not an academy in Sitka like there is for the troopers. I mean, the training would be here in Juneau?
Nope, it's the same academy in Sitka.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yep, they go to the same academy, and that was our email address I gave you.
Not okay.
The website is attached to the city website. You can get through there.
Okay.
They go to the same academy in Sitka. We do our own in-house training as well, but all state police officers either go to that academy or the one in Fairbanks.
Okay, I was not aware. So it's a full formal training then, just to get the complete panoply of, you know, the firearms and the situation response and just all sorts of things that you need to know if you're going to be a peace officer.
Yep, they do the whole thing.
And your goal is probably to get some folks in there who will be with the force for a while so that you will not have to worry about retraining new people and you'll get some institutional knowledge built up.
That would be really good. So we get a lot of people that come here to be police officers, usually from the Washington area, Seattle area, and we found that they'll usually stay 4 or 5 years and then return there to work in their hometowns. And that's fine. If we can get someone like that, we'll take it. That's good. But we really like it when we have local folks that want to be public servants and be police officers that have some roots here and want to stick around for 20, 25 years. That's great, too.
Well, community policing works better if the policemen and policewomen are really community members, and the longer the better, probably, because they understand it with the whole opioid epidemic. You know, that's one thing to come in and try to be a law enforcement officer responding to it. But if you've been here and perhaps you've known some of the people who've been victims to that. That probably just takes it to a different level of caring, I think.
It does. A great example of that is Officer Jason Van Sickle. I don't know if you know Officer Van Sickle, but he was a school resource officer for a long time. And so most of those, I call them kids, most of those people that had those overdoses, he interacted with them during those school years. And you know, he has stories of people that he interacted with, and he helped get off of heroin, and that still goes on till today. We had one that was just recently that they were able to clean up their life, and it was like Officer Jason Van Sickle had been with them for all those years in between, and he takes it personal. You know, if things go well, he takes great pride in it, and if things go bad, it hurts him on a personal level because he cares about the people's work with. So your point is right there. He's a community member, and there's a lot of Juneau police officers are like that. They are members of the community unlike any other police department that I have ever seen.
Well, we are fortunate to have all the fine men and women who serve at the Juneau Police Department, but certainly those with the longer roots in the community. Maybe it just gives them a little extra perspective, a little extra incentive to try to do the best they can for the community. Well, Chief Johnson, it's great to learn about the goings-on with the JPD and to know that, once again, like I said, we survived the weekend pretty unscathed for Independence Day. Any final words you'd like to share with our listeners on a Juneau afternoon?
Just thanks for having me here today, and if you can be a good neighbor, then that would help us out tremendously. So get to know your neighbors, say hi to them, and
treat them like you'd want to be treated.
Yeah, and take care of each other.
Very good. Thank you very much, Chief Bryce Johnson from the Juneau Police Department.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 5th of July, 2016. It's the birthday of the harpsichordist Wanda Landowska, born in Warsaw, 1879, known as the rediscoverer of the harpsichord. She revived interest in the instrument during the first half of the 20th century. It was on this day, 1946, the bikini was introduced in Paris by the designer Jacques Haim. It was known as the world's smallest bathing suit, and he called it the atom, the atom, and it got its name because there had been a nuclear test at Bikini Island in the Pacific. It said in the advertisements that a swimsuit was not really a bikini unless you could pass it through a wedding ring. It was considered indecent at first, but by 1960 it had become a big hit. It's the birthday of the writer Gary Steingart, born in Leningrad, Russia, 1972, author of the Russian Debutante's Handbook and Absurdistan. Family emigrated to Queens when he was a boy, struggled to learn English at a Hebrew school there. Family had no television set, and Steingart didn't lose his Russian accent until he was about 14. And it's the birthday of the writer and artist Jean Cocteau, born in Maison Lafitte, a resort town outside Paris, in 1889, whose advice to artists was listen carefully to criticisms made of your work, note just what it is about your work that critics don't like, then cultivate it. That's the only part of your work that's individual and worth keeping. Here's a poem for today by Marjorie Sazer. She gives me the watch off her arm. My mother wants me to go to college. The closest she has ever been is this, the dorm. Her father had needed her to dig the potatoes and load them into burlap bags, but here she is, leaving her daughter on the campus in the city. Time to go. We're at the desk. The clerk is wide-eyed when my mother asks her if she will take an out-of-town check, if the need arises, if something comes up, so my girl will have money. Even I know this isn't going to happen, this check cashing, a clerk helping me with money. But miracle of miracles, the clerk says nothing, and I say nothing, and my mother feels better. We go to the parking lot, old glasses, thick graying hair. She's wearing a man's shirt, has to get back to the job. We stand beside her Ford, and it is here she undoes the buckle of the watch and holds it out to me. My father's watch, keeping good time for him and then for her. She says she knows I will need a watch to get to class. We hug, and she gets in, starts the car, eases into traffic. No wave. The metal of the back of the watch is smooth to my thumb, and it keeps for a moment a warmth from her skin. She gives me the watch off her arm, a poem by Marjorie Sazer from I Have Nothing to Say About Fire, published by the Backwaters Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com, and by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turn cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And it's 44, almost 45 minutes after the hour, and I'm Ben Brown, and this is a Juno Afternoon. And our last guest today, certainly not our least, is Renee Hughes, who is here from the Last Chance Mining Museum and Historical Park, located in Last Chance Basin.
Thanks, Ben.
Good to see you. How are things for you this Juno Afternoon?
Oh, it's been wonderful. We had quite a few visitors this morning. There have been a lot of families and friends in town because of the 4th of July, so people that maybe have never been up to the Mining Museum have been coming up because they have a little group of people and want to do something a little off the beaten path, and so they come up.
And so then those are different kinds of visitors than cruise ship visitors or independent travelers. These are people who came to Juneau to see somebody for Independence Day for the most part.
For a lot of them, yes. I get a few cruise ship people, but not as many as locals with friends.
Well, good. So, well, it's been a long time since I've been up to the Last Chance Mining Museum. I think the last time I was up there was for a Friends of the State Museum board meeting, which must have been 12 years ago if it was a day. But I know that the place is still going strong, so what's your favorite thing that's going on this summer up there?
Well, this is our 22nd season, and last year AELMP had part of their collection in storage, and they decided that our museum would be a good place to relocate some of the stuff so that we could share it with the public. And we managed to acquire the second glass map, which shows the different levels that connect all the way over to Sheep Creek. And so that's pretty exciting. And we got a grant, so we're going to start replicating the glass that's in there so that we can preserve the information that's on the glass for the future and have an accurate way to look at it so that people can see what they were actually looking at when they were working in the mines.
Wow. And so, and of course, what will surprise people is how much tunnel space there is, how many routes there were here, there, and everywhere underneath all those mines.
Well, the AJ mine originally was a lot of little independent mines that were purchased by bigger corporations and persons with the opportunity to bring in capital funds to be able to fund the big equipment like we have up at the museum, like the air compressor that just required a lot of money to fund it to get us into the hard rock era.
Yep. And so now, Juno residents who want to come visit, is there a specific day that's better than other days? You're not inundated with cruise ship visitors, so a lot of days are probably pretty reasonable. But if you had to recommend, what would be the best time to come up?
Later in the week is usually pretty good. The weekends are pretty big ship days, so there's a lot of activity going on downtown. And some of the people that come to visit are cruise ship people that are looking to get off, get some exercise, get some fresh air, enjoy the wilderness that we all appreciate here in Juneau.
Do you think a lot of people go for a little hike on the Perseverance Trail and make that part of their visit to the Last Chance Basin?
Well, they start up the hill and they see a sign, and then they go a little further and they see another sign, and then they walk over the trestle and they're in the wilderness, and then it becomes a nice walk, and then they see another sign, and they're right there.
And then they see the hill and think, oh, I don't want to climb all the way up that. I'm going to go to this museum instead.
Well, and my husband built all these great benches along the way up to the museum so that if you do need a little assistance, there's a place to sit and rest. And for the people that are of limited mobility, we purchased a John Deere Gator several years ago so that I can get the persons that just might need a little extra assistance up the hill.
Now, I'm remembering back when I was on the Friends Board with you many years ago, we had Museum Day, and people were able to visit the State Museum, the City Museum, your museum, the Last Chance Mining Museum, and maybe some others.
The Russian Orthodox Church.
The church, but not DIPAC, but it was this. And I remember
downtown.
Somebody crazily enough gave me one of those little minivan bus things to drive people around. No one was hurt, but the ones with the really huge mirrors that you could take someone's head off with. So is there still a museum day? It was a long-winded way to ask my question. Are we still doing some sort of a unified museum day like that?
Well, I think I'm probably the one who asked you to drive that van many years ago.
Again, no one was hurt.
Well, between the last 2 years, International Museum Day is May 18th, and with the State Museum not being able to be open during that time, we haven't done it for the last couple of years.
But boy, now that the State Museum is open, the Kasheverov building, that would be a great thing to maybe think about doing next year.
For next year, I think the Museums Alaska Conference is going to be there this fall, so it's getting a lot of attention. And that's pretty exciting.
Well, I would be happy to attend that day. I don't know if I want to volunteer to drive the van again, because, I mean, it may be pure luck that no one was harmed the last time. I was surprised you didn't have to have a commercial driver's license to drive one of those things, but apparently you don't have to.
At least not back then.
Not back then. Maybe they've changed the rules for the better now.
So, well, I think I'm going to leave that job to the professional.
And we have more of them in town than we did back then.
Exactly.
So Museums Alaska is a great organization. It's the umbrella group that's a consortium, basically, of museums. You know, the Samuel Fox Museum in Dellingham and the
All
one up in Nome. I mean, it's just the little one in Palmer, where I worked as a kid at high school.
The Hammer Museum up in Haines.
You see, the Hammer Museum up in Haines. So that's, I was going to say, do you really enjoy that interaction through Museums Alaska, and do you feel like you get something out of it as a museum proprietor yourself?
I think we all get something out of it, because they offer a wide variety of things that are going around the state, and we all face different issues. The Mining Museum is uninsulated and doesn't have environmental controls, where the State Museum has to have the environmental controls and be a more controlled environment. So it's a totally different experience.
Right. And the Mining Museum, being right there in Gold Creek, the upper reaches of Gold Creek, not the past few years, but 10 years ago when we were having heavy snow loads, that was watching nature in action up there. You weren't sure what was going to happen next when the ice went out on Gold Creek.
Yes, avalanches do happen, and we pay attention to what's happening around us in the natural world.
Absolutely. Okay, so the Last Chance Mining Museum and Historical Park, do you have a website?
We are just in the process of putting one together. If you look up the Historic Society, I think you can find it there.
Okay.
We are also, the Mining Museum's got a Facebook page, so you can find us there as well.
And that's a way for people to find out about hours,
admission, all that kind of stuff. Admission's $5. I do have a split shift, so I'm open in the morning, which is 9:30 to 12:30, and then I take a break in the middle of the day, and then we open up again in the afternoon until 6:30. That way, if people do work till 4:30, they can still come up in the afternoon. And with the days being as long as they are, it's nice to have a whole extra day to come and play in the creek and see the museum, learn a little bit about Juneau, and just enjoy the day.
Mm-hmm. And so people have visitors coming from out of town now that Independence Day is behind us, but over the rest of the summer, they could, you know, give you a call or look on Facebook and kind of structure their visit so they can make the most of their visit to Last Chance Basin.
And they can also come up and pan for gold.
And there's that as well.
Because gold fever does exist.
Well, Renee Hughes, I'm very happy to know that things are still going really well up at the Last Chance Mining Museum.
Thank you.
And that you're doing your part as an independent museum operator, which there are not that many of in Alaska.
Well, the Historic Society's done a great job with all the volunteers and support that we have from the community.
Excellent. All right, any other words of wisdom you'd like to share with our listeners this Juneau afternoon?
Well, to see you up on the hillside.
Very good. Thank you so much, Renee Hughes, for the rest of the summer. I wish you all the best up there, and I'll do my best to cross the bridge myself at some point.
Great. Thanks, Ben.
Yep, thank you.
This is Bird Note. Birds are part of the complex web of nature, and each fits into this web in its own way. Hummingbirds are feathered sprites that can dart past you at high speed, but then stop on a dime. The bird's ability to hover lets it hang in front of a flower and probe with its long bill and tubular tongue, sucking up the nectar that provides essential nourishment. While feeding at a flower, a hummingbird gets pollen on its forehead and throat. When it visits another flower of the same species, it transfers the pollen to that flower. The pollen fertilizes the plant's eggs to produce its seeds, and the plant's reproduction is assured. Plants can't travel about to visit one another, but pollinators can. In return, the plants furnish that important nectar. Hummingbirds are well-known pollinators, but they aren't the only ones. These rainbow lorikeets you're hearing feed with their brushy tongues on the nectar of eucalyptus and other Australian plants. Lorikeets and honeyeaters in Australia, sunbirds in Africa, hummingbirds in the Americas. Throughout the tropics and into the temperate regions, there are bird pollinators and plants that depend upon them. Join BirdNote in January as we journey south to the Amazon Basin for a cruise. Learn more on our website, birdnote.org, and hurry, trips fill fast.
The This station receives support from Harris Air, offering daily service from Sitka to Juneau with possible connections to Petersburg, Wrangell, Kluwak, Cake, Angoon, and Port Alexander. More information is available at 907-966-3050.
It's about 5.5 minutes before the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 5th of July. You've been listening to a Juneau afternoon. The weather forecast from our friends at the National Weather Service. For the rest of today, it's for mostly cloudy conditions with a high around 65 degrees and south winds at 10 miles per hour. This evening, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain, a low around 53 degrees. Southwest winds at 10 miles per hour this evening, becoming light and variable. Tomorrow, cloudy with a chance of rain, a high around 62. Tomorrow night, a low around 54 with a continuing cloudy condition and chance of rain. And cloudy with a chance of showers basically all the way through the weekend. So, you know, that was the forecast for Independence Day, and it certainly wasn't too rainy. So I think we can take heart from that. The Parks and Recreation hike for the 6th of July tomorrow is to Auk Mountain. This is a moderate to difficult hike. Please wear waterproof boots, bring plenty of food and water, no dogs or firearms. Carpooling is encouraged, and the John Muir Cabin Trailhead is the reconnaissance point, 9:30 a.m. So that's tomorrow's Juneau Parks and Recreation hike. Tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon, the Summer Fun Series will continue with a profile of Alaska wedding adventures with Mary Ann Ray. Allison Gillum and Emma Davis from the Southeast Alaska Land Trust will come on the air to talk about the upcoming plein air workshop. Capital Transit will be represented, talking about new ways technology is being used to help people understand their transit services. And Becca Souza will be here to discuss the STEM summer camp. Always, of course, in addition to the other features that you like so much on a Juneau afternoon.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case.
The FBI director says Hillary Clinton or her colleagues were extremely careless with...